You're listening to the Nightlife Podcast with Indira Naidu.
Time now to head into the world of 007. The 25th James Bond film hits cinemas in just over a month. No Time to Die will be the last time we see Daniel Craig in the role of cinema's most famous spy. I'm sad about that. Over the last 60 years, a lot of different actors have picked up Bond's infamous Walter PPK pistol. Are you a Bond fan? What would you love, or what do you love about these films? And do you think it's managed to keep up with the times? How would you like to see it change in the future? Well, one person who is very excited about this new James Bond adventure is the man sitting in front of me. His name is Johnson, CJ Johnson. And I have a wonderful virtual martini here for you, CJ, shaken, not stirred.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Johnson, CJ Johnson. Of course, of course. Well done.
You're obviously a Bond fan.
Yeah, I am a huge Bond fan. And it's funny, that thing of, you know, I see films partly for a living, but the kind of film that I can get most excited about is a Bond film coming out. This is one of those, here I am an adult and I don't get as excited about things as I used to, but I still get tremendously excited by the very concept that there is a new Bond film coming in April, in early April. That really jazzes me up. And it's that kind of excitement that tinges on the nervousness in a way. Like, I don't want to hear anything about it. I don't want to see the trailer. I want to know as little as possible because I want the whole thing to be as surprising and fresh as possible. In the way I suppose I used to feel about Star Wars films and certain other properties, but the other stuff has fallen by the wayside for me now that, you know, I'm a man in my 40s, but the Bond excitement hasn't. It remains that way. And so for me, it's the longest stayer. It is my franchise.
Well, that's the extraordinary thing. Over 60 years, 24 films already, people still hang in there. I mean, so many other franchises find it so difficult, don't they, to keep people committed year after year. What do you think is the success of James Bond?
That it's a family company. Yeah, the whole thing is a family company. In fact, it might be, you know, it's such a strange thing. It was essentially, it's too difficult to get into the whole history of the initial rights because there were a few producers battling over the rights for Bond in the early years, and various characters' rights belonged to some people and the other. But essentially, at the end of the day, the official James Bond film series, that is this one now with Daniel Craig, that will be the 25th in the series, is a family company. So the original producer was a guy named Albert R. Broccoli. He worked with a couple of other people, but ultimately he ended up with the sole rights. And when he died, his daughter, Barbara Broccoli, took over, and she and her husband, Michael G. Wilson, have been the steerers of the ship ever since. And they make all the decisions. They cast the next Bond every time. They decide when someone's time is up and say, I'm sorry, you know, you've done your bit. Now it's time for a new person. And they cast the new person and they hire the directors and they decide how to nudge the thing, you know, towards modernity this way, or how they're going to address this or that or the other. And, you know, what countries they haven't been to yet. They make all of these decisions. And because it is a family company, I think it has this sort of interior integrity that you can rely on, because, you know, Star Wars, for example, now belongs to Disney. And so that is different. It is George Lucas sold Star Wars to Disney for $4 billion. So it's no longer George Lucas's thing. But the Bond films still belong to the Broccoli family, to the daughter of Albert Broccoli, to Barbara Broccoli. I mean, it's incredible that it is so intimate in that way. And I think maybe that's part of it.
We're talking James Bond films with CJ Johnson. We'd love to hear who your favourite Bond is. Well, CJ, now that your, you know, told us about your passion for Bond and why you're so passionate about it. Tell us a little about this special project that you embarked upon to take your passion, your obsession to an even deeper level.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a special project. 3 years ago, my partner and I decided to start watching all of the Bonds again from the beginning in order. And we're certainly not the only people to do so. I think many, many people all over the world have made that decision at some point or another in their lives. And we're only halfway through.
Really?
Yeah, we're only up to, we are up to the first Timothy Dalton. So maybe we're a little more than halfway through, but we wouldn't even be quite up to two thirds of the way through yet. Because, you know, it takes a while and you can't watch too many of them in succession. Like you can't watch four Bond films over a week.
Can't you?
Well, the reason you can't is because there is a formula. You know what I mean? There is a basic formula about when and where he meets the female and when and where he does this and when and where the villain enters and when and where he sits down to dinner with the villain and when and where the villain walks away from the dinner table, you know, all of that stuff.
So you start becoming too aware of the formula if you watch them too close together.
Yeah, yeah. And the formula rears its ugly head and it starts to look, you know, a little, I don't want to use the word cheesy, but it looks formulaic, you know, yeah. So you do need to space it out a little bit. But we decided to start at the beginning, and more than that, we decided to rather foolhardily rate each movie in 20 different categories out of 10 each for a grand total of a score out of 200 for every movie.
Right.
Because we defined 20 categories. Cold open, money penny and M&Q, humor, action, location, story, villain, death of villain, song, set design, Bond girl, secondary girls, Bond's man in country, other supporting players, gadgets, vehicles, integrity, Bond's performance, so the performance of the actor playing Bond, sex, and finally, vibe. So vibe is like miscellaneous. And and in doing so, it was really quite interesting because, I mean, if you take this sort of thing seriously, as we obviously were, because all of the films have all of those elements, and to see how they've course-corrected over time, you know, when they were starting to get a little too funny and you'll find that they'll suddenly pull it back and do a serious one, or, you know, that the emphasis was getting too much on gadgets, and then all of a sudden you'll find the next one has no gadgets because they are constantly, you know, refining it, and they're never letting it go too far in one direction.
Right. So Roger Moore was probably the funniest Bond. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And Roger Moore was my Bond as a child.
Yeah.
You know, we've all
Octopussy.
Got a Bond. Yeah. You know, that's, I guess I was of an age to go to the cinema. When I first started going to the cinema, he was the Bond in the cinema. And he had a long run. Craig has had a long run now. But Roger Moore had a nice run. And his thing was, I guess Sean Connery was kind of a bit of a brute, a bit tough, a bit of a bruiser, a bit of a, you know, pub fighter. And Roger Moore was elegant. He was a sir. He was British in that and witty and he was much more David Niven. And Sean Connery was more Daniel Craig.
Well, I remember him saying when he wrote his book Bond on Bond, talking about when he was asked to play Bond, that he really couldn't take it that seriously, he said, because how could you be a spy when everyone knew who you were? Everyone knew the drink you preferred. How could you actually properly go about your assignments when everyone knew who you were?
Yeah, well, that's always bothered me about the Bond series is at some point early on in the series, Bond became world famous, like within the fiction of the universe. And so all of these villains knew that Bond was around and he kept going to places and introducing himself as James Bond. So for a spy, he blew his cover, you know, usually within the first 7 or 8 minutes of the film.
Didn't seem to affect his career though.
No, I mean, it's sort of, you know, there's multiple things at play in terms of the reality of how James Bond would actually work. But Roger Moore was, I suppose he was really good until you saw Connery in a way. I remember sort of that being my journey was I just, you know, I took for granted that Roger Moore was James Bond and that the style and flavor of James Bond movies was that style and flavor. But then, you know, when you see at least the first two Conneries, Dr. No and From Russia with Love, which are much more straight down the line spy movies, particularly From Russia with Love, which could have been written almost by Len Dayton or someone like that, you get a sense of, oh, okay, Bond isn't this necessarily. He's also that. But one of the things I think that is fundamental to my enjoyment of Bond is travel. the Bond movies have always been armchair travel movies for me, you know, and particularly when he goes to the snow. You know, there are quite a few Bond movies where he goes either to Austria or somewhere in Germany or somewhere in Switzerland, and he's in the snow and he's skiing, and suddenly there are bad guys skiing behind him. And, you know, Honor Majesty's Secret Service in particular takes place entirely in the snow, or almost entirely in the snow, and there's a bobsled chase and all of this, toboggans, skiing chases. And that was just so exotic to me, especially coming from Australia. The idea of, you know, spending long periods on a snowy peak was extraordinary.
And there were so many forms of transport to get to all these locations. They went on helicopters, on trains, submarines, cars, every form of, even in Octopussy, what, there was some sort of strange contraption that Roger Moore came out of at one stage. I think it was it an underwater car or something like that?
Oh, goodness. He had an underwater car in The Spy Who Loved Me.
Oh, Spy Who Loved You, right.
Octopussy, I think that, I mean, at various times he's been in a sort of gyrocopter type thingy, like a one-man helicopter thing. That's reared its head a couple of times. But Octopussy was, there was a lot of it on a train. Trains feature very heavily in the Bond universe. In fact, from Russia with Love, the big fight between Sean Connery and Robert Shaw is on a train on the Orient Express. Mm. And that's rather extraordinary. And I certainly saw that movie before I'd ever been on any train like that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, that was so extraordinary.
So we're talking James Bond films here with CJ Johnson. We'd love to hear what your favourite Bond was, what your favourite movie, your theme song, everything about James Bond tonight. How did you come up with all those different 20 categories for your assessment? CJ?
I guess we started from the top. So we started with Dr. No and You Only Live Twice and based it, I guess, off those or off the first three. See, once you get to Goldfinger, Goldfinger is the third. And by the end of Goldfinger, you've got all elements of the Bond universe in place. And Goldfinger really is a template because it's got a bit of everything that is in every other Bond film. So if you were ever stuck, if they didn't have a script for No Time to Die, they could always just go back to the screenplay of Goldfinger and do a rewrite on that, you know, that's got the basic template that has sort of become the set template for every Bond film. Dr. No was, you know, Dr. No was a small film. It was the first time. They had no idea whether it was going to be a success or not. They by all means, they thought no, you know. They was taking a big risk. They thought we could be one and done. It was made for £1 million. And it had limited locations, et cetera, et cetera. Then they doubled the budget to £2 million for From Russia With Love because Dr. No was a massive, massive hit. And then From Russia With Love was a huge, huge hit. So they doubled the budget again to $4 million for Goldfinger. And Goldfinger became this sort of extravagant thing with just all the gadgets and all especially the villain. You know, with Goldfinger, you really got this sense of that the villain was going to be as important as Bond. And that from now on, every time we had a Bond movie, we had to have a star villain opposite Bond.
Okay, well, we're getting a call through coming from Drew in Wembley. His favourite film he's going to tell us about. Which is your favourite Bond, Drew?
Yeah, it's Timothy Dalton. Which is a little bit rare because he only did two. But I just found that he brought the grittiness and the seriousness back to Bond, which was referred to before with Sean Connery. And it didn't really take at the time because I think it was the 80s and action movies with sort of Schwarzenegger and Stallone were all the rage. But it was really the prelude that Craig eventually got it back to get them a bit more serious again. What do you both think?
CJ?
Which one do you prefer? Do you prefer The Living Daylights or do you prefer License to Kill?
Oh.
That's a tough one.
I tell you what, License to Kill.
Really?
I mean, yeah, it's one of the most underrated Bond movies. There is so much in it. I mean, look, there are some horrific pieces of dialogue which probably really kill some of the reviews. But, you know, 88% of the movie is just, it's got everything. It's got everything that a Bond film wants. And Timothy Dalton, you know, as a thespian actor, he was superb. And it's just a shame that he didn't stick, in my opinion.
I prefer the other one. I prefer the first one, The Living Daylights, because I guess it's so European. And I really love Bond when he goes to Europe. For me, that's the ultimate Bond, is he exists best running around Europe. And in License to Kill, which, I mean, sorry, in The Living Daylights, was made in 87, just before the wall came down. And it starts in Czechoslovakia, and it's about helping a Russian defect to the West. And only, you know, 2 years after that, of course, the wall came down and everything changed. So yeah. Watching it now, it's like, oh, wow, that feels of a completely another time and place. And I guess in License to Kill, it's very much sort of the American / Mexican drug trade. And I don't know, that one felt a bit Miami Vice-ish to me.
So, Drew, yeah. What do you think about Daniel Craig?
Oh, look, I think he's fantastic. I think he's done one too many.
One too many.
look, I think this, as in No Time to Die, I would have preferred if they took a fresh take and take the character in a different direction. I feel that it's, you know, Roger Moore did way too many Bonds. And I think Daniel Craig's probably just done one too many, but look, who can argue with Casino Royale? I mean, Casino Royale was just a brilliant movie.
It was superb, but you're still carrying a torch for Timothy Dalton.
Oh, look, yeah, I mean, it's a bit of going for the underdog, isn't it, or all the underappreciated, but...
Do you know why he got shafted?
I pride myself on my James Bond knowledge, but help me out.
Okay, so they wanted Pierce Brosnan, and when they...
Oh, that's right, Remington Steele.
Yeah, when they announced that they wanted Pierce Brosnan, Remington Steele, which Pierce Brosnan was on but was basically finished, decided to renew itself because Bond had said that they wanted Brosnan. So Remington Steele said, well, if you want him, we want him back.
Right,
and so
right.
Because they had an option on his time, he had to go back and do Remington Steele, so he couldn't do Bond, which is ridiculous. It's sort of a tale chasing itself.
Yes.
And so they got Timothy Dalton, and then when Pierce Brosnan was done with Remington Steele, when he'd fulfilled his contract, then they pretty much canned Timothy Dalton, brought in Pierce Brosnan, who they always saw as, why wouldn't he be Bond? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To them, he was like a born Bond. And he kind of was, in a way, when you think about it. He kind of combined elements of Connery and Moore. He was sort of funny, but also kind of dark.
Mm.
You didn't like Pierce Brosnan?
I liked him. I think, look, if Timothy Dalton had Pierce Brosnan's look, then I think, you know, it wouldn't have been a debate. But, I mean, the interesting fact that my friend and I always talk about is that GoldenEye was a fantastic movie, and that was directed by Martin Campbell. And Casino Royale was a fantastic movie, and funnily enough, that was directed by Martin Campbell, if I have my facts right.
That's right.
So we just want to get him back.
I'm sure they'll get him back for the next one to introduce the new Bond, because that's what Martin Campbell does well, is introduce the new Bond.
Who do you both want to be the next Bond?
We'll save that for the second half
of
the
hour.
Yeah,
second half we'll be talking about. Keep listening, Drew, and we'll talk about that in the second half hour. But thanks for joining us.
No worries.
Okay, bye-bye. Chat. Well, that's fascinating. Timothy Dalton, I mean, who do you think generally tends to be the least popular Bond?
Okay, that's a good one. I mean, some people would say George Lazenby, the famous Australian George Lazenby, who was one and done with On Her Majesty's Secret Service. But those very same people will turn around and say that On Her Majesty's Secret Service is easily one of, if not the best film in the entire series. I mean, it is universally regarded as a very, very, very good entry, always in the top five, blah, 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 blah. For me, it's number two of the entire series. I think George Lazenby is very, very good in the film. And I'm not just barracking for the home team. I think he really is good. And I think he was very Bond. I think he really, really, really fit the role. But so some people rank on him just because he was Australian, blah, 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 because he was a male model.
Yeah, David Niven never quite worked for me.
In what, Casino Royale? Mm. Yeah, but that movie's not really a real thing.
And this is the problem, isn't it? Because sometimes you judge a Bond, but it's the film that's weak, not the actual actor playing the character.
Mm. That Casino Royale is, I mean, that's not really part of the series. That's a spoof, and you know, Woody Allen's also playing Bond, and Peter Sellers is also playing Bond, and all of this. But David Niven, they originally wanted David Niven way back in the day.
Yeah,
way back in the day when they were first casting it, and I can see why. He was very, very Roger Moore-ish. I mean, there are some people who don't like Timothy Dalton. Clearly, I have to admit, you know, no offense to our caller Drew, I don't like Timothy Dalton because I find he does too much in a close-up. I find he's got a big smirk, and when he deploys that smirk in a close-up, it looks too big. And he plays both his two films too angry. He's really angry all the time. Mm-hmm. He was a theater actor, a very good theater actor, and I think he's too theatrical. I think, he's not subtle enough for the close-ups. Everyone loves Daniel Craig, clearly. Some people love Pierce Brosnan. Some people don't. I mean, the traditional battle comes down to Sean Connery and Roger Moore. And I guess because they are the most different.
And do you remember in that Bond book when Roger Moore was interviewed, he said that he always preferred Sean Connery. He always thought he was the best Bond. But he made that comment in the book before Daniel Craig was cast. And I think he went back and said, if I'd been asked after Daniel Craig, I think my money would have been with him. He said that he thought he was even a bigger killer, more intense than Sean Connery.
Yeah. I mean, one thing you get about Roger Moore when you get obsessed with Bond is everyone agrees he was a great guy, a really good guy, just light, took everything well, very professional, and was just so nice about all the others, he never saw it as a competition, and he never took himself too seriously at all, and never rated himself as an actor, always understood that he was a very handsome British man for whom the screen, worked as a thing, whereas Sean Connery supposedly took acting very seriously. I think what you've got to remember is that acting has changed over the years because of technology. In Sean Connery's day, in those movies in the 60s, you just had to project more for your voice to be properly picked up. You just had to hit your marks more for the focus. Technology has allowed actors to become more subtle and allowed them to be able to be more subtle and more realistic with their voice and with the expressions on their faces. We've been able to get closer and closer. Literally, people can whisper now. People can say things under their breath. Sean Connery could not say anything under his breath because the recording technology wasn't good enough. So naturally, his performances look unnatural or more stagey compared to Daniel Craig because acting has changed as technology has changed.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And HD as well is not very flattering, is it? It shows everything.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Craig is a bruiser, has a bruiser's face. I mean, he's still sexy as hell and he's great looking and all of this, but he doesn't look like Roger Moore. He doesn't look like Timothy Dalton. He doesn't look like Pierce Brosnan. Those are the three pretty Bonds. Actually, George Lazenby was pretty as well. But you've got Sean Connery and Daniel Craig.
That should have been one of your categories. Who's the prettiest Bond?
Prettiest Bond, yeah. Whereas Craig and Sean Connery, they're the bruisers and I think sort of they're natural allies.
Well, who is your prettiest Bond?
My prettiest Bond? Oh, man, you can't go past Pierce Brosnan, can you? He's pretty pretty.
He is pretty. And we've got on the line Andrew from Belfield. So let me just take his call. Hello,
yes,
Andrew.
I've got a question which I've always worried about. From Russia to Love, I remember actually seeing that film in black and white on television when it first came out. And apparently, which I don't know if it's true or not, there are a couple of scenes that were in it that were actually censored. And in fact, in the latest versions that we actually have and buy, you can actually get, obviously, that those scenes have been cut out. The major one that was about was, I think, when it was that Rosa Klebb, who I can't remember the actress who played it.
Lottie Lenya.
Yeah, and trying to do those things. I think there was two scenes and one of the scenes was cut out. Do you know if that's true or not?
Well, certainly, films used to be cut up for television all the time. They were edited for time constraints. They were edited, so they could add ads, commercials, but also they were edited for content because television used to be much more Puritan, I suppose. And so films were edited for violence and sex and blah, 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 blah. So thinking about From Russia with Love, I mean, those films from the 60s seem relatively tame to us now. So I don't know what they would have cut out for television at the time, but I don't think anything was cut for the cinemas.
That were involved with it, she first meets her and tries to get her involved in obviously doing the spying and doing all that. And then there's a second scene where she goes back and sees her again. and there's sort of a bit of a risque sort of, it was in a veil and hiding actually behind it. And for example, that was, I'm sure that that was actually what was cut out.
Do you mean the same sex, the lesbian overtones in From Russia With Love?
That's right.
Yeah, maybe they were cut out for Australian television. That's entirely possible.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that those two scenes in the movies that you go and get now, in regards to that, that second scene's not in it.
Really?
Yeah. And so what I'm saying is on the TV that was in black and white, it was the additional scene that was in that. Anyway, you obviously, I must admit that that's my favourite film of all the James Bond films by miles. I think it's very well put together. It's got a good story. It's interesting. It's got the spy stuff in it as well. And, you know, you never ever find out what happens in the end. It's always the stages where you get the girl. He gets the girl, but you never see the girl again. You never find out actually what happens if they continue on with a relationship or drop out or whatever, which always ends on, you know, that's the way it normally ends with the romantic bits in the end. But anyway, yeah, I've never actually heard anything about it. I've looked on the net and looked for those particular things, but that missing scene has always been something that's perplexed me.
Well, I'm sure CJ will be doing a bit of research for you, Andrew, because he knows everything about Bond.
It is interesting, though, the idea, because there are these sort of lesbian overtones with that Lottie Lenya character and the younger female character in From Russia With Love. And it does strike me as curious that maybe that was edited for the television release in Australia and possibly even for the cinema release. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. But, the whole idea of it was that's why she was using that as the hook to make sure that she did what she's saying.
Yeah.
And didn't do all those sort of things by getting something on her so she couldn't use it against her later. So it had all those sort of implications that are in there. But it was interesting, the television showed it, but it just disappeared after that.
Right. Okay, well, thank you, Andrew, and thanks for joining our conversation about James Bond.
Thank you.
CJ, if I can ask you, James Bond obviously has been an ongoing genre and theme that's crossed decades and different political and social norms. Have there been times, though, when the films have referred to the era they're in? There are references to what's going on socially or politically.
Yeah, they tried. Well, obviously, pre the Berlin Wall coming down, they always had the Cold War. You know what I mean? So all of the Bonds up until 89 essentially are Cold War films, and you always had the Russians to fall back on as the villains. But of course, Ian Fleming constructed this sort of world criminal organization. There was Spectre and there was Smersh, but they were usually dealing with the Russians somehow. And Blofeld, you know, there was always this Russian vibe lurking in the background. And the Cold War was the war, the sort of the thing, you know, that's what employed spies.
Yeah.
And so after that, they had to figure out, once the war came down, they kind of had to figure out what to do. And one of the things they did try and do once they got Pierce Brosnan in was they did try and go for current offense. So, for example, I think it's Tomorrow Never Dies, the second Pierce Brosnan film, tries to take place against the handover of Hong Kong. For example,
the
handing back of Hong Kong. And that was where they were really trying to be like, okay, let's see what happens if we can put Bond into what's kind of going on right now. And likewise, it was very much the Jonathan Pryce character played a media mogul, and he was very much reflective of like a Rupert Murdoch kind of, Ted Turner kind of, even Robert Maxwell kind of slash, you know, and
media
evocative
magnet.
Of media mogul. And so they were trying to echo real people and echo what was going on. And with that Hong Kong handover, something that was very, very much going on. And indeed, you've got certain other things, for example, around that time, or maybe it's actually even in the first Dalton, there's references to the Taliban, etc. And Bond goes and fights with the Taliban or meets up with leaders of the Taliban. So he has crisscrossed occasionally, but I think in general, the idea is no. Let's not tie him to what's currently going on. Because also, these films are beasts, and they've become even bigger beasts. Like, it's strange at the moment because this will only be Craig's fifth film, but I think he has now served the longest because they've taken the longest between the films. He started in 2006, I believe, so this will be, what, 14 years. And this will only be five films within those 14 years. So if you're only making a film every 3.5 to 4 years, you can't be topical. You know what I mean? There's no point having Bond deal with Trump because hopefully Trump won't be there.
So you won't expect any references to climate change in the new Bond film?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I know nothing about the new Bond film, and I've done that deliberately. Like, I will avoid watching the trailer. I will avoid reading the plot synopsis because I just want to have a fresh experience. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised if climate as some kind of theme is in the next Bond or the next Bonds, because clearly that's an ongoing issue. Mm. You know, that is not going to be solved by the time that the next Bond movie comes out. So that's actually something that they could bank on. But in general, they try and avoid sort of those sort of real time politics. Now, in terms of grander politics, of course, the biggest grand political thing around Bond is his relationship to women and how they have dealt with and are dealing with and intend to deal in the future with that is, I think, the most interesting thing going on in the Bond movies, because they're not nincompoops, you know, Bob Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson. They're very smart people, and they're also progressive people, and they take this stuff seriously, mm-hmm. and they're not going to, you know, do the wrong thing, but they're also desperately concerned with keeping Bond and keeping the legacy alive. So the way that they deal with that, I think, is really quite fascinating.
Well, we've got an SMS that's come through from someone that says, James Bond has always been patriarchal, misogynistic twaddle.
Well, he's certainly been patriarchal and misogynistic, absolutely. And as the series goes on, what's very interesting about Bond as a character is that his qualities are flaws, you know, that what was once celebrated about him have now been revealed in the modern world and the modern context to be his deep, deep flaws. And he is a truly problematic character. And that's fascinating to go forward with, is how problematic he is and how we deal with it. And one of the masterstrokes in, I don't know when they did it, about 15 years ago, it was during the Pierce Brosnan era, was recasting M with Judi Dench. Yes. And making a female Bond superior. And that really freshened things up. And the scenes between Judi Dench and Pierce Brosnan and then subsequently Daniel Craig have always been some of the best acted scenes and the best written scenes in the entire franchise history.
They were terrific,
weren't
they? Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a call from Scott in Lang Warren in Victoria. Hello, Scott. How are you tonight?
Yeah. Oh, thanks very much for taking my call, both. I think the most terrible Bond would have to be Pierce Brosnan.
And why is that, Scott?
By far, I think he's not. He was a big girl's blouse, I think, you know. Look, some of the early ones. I'm in my 50s, so I go through and Lazenby, and Sean Connery, and my favourite of the Bond movies was Moonraker with Sean Connery with Roger Moore, and it's just my theory of things. And I stopped watching James Bond movies when there was Pierce Brosnan involved.
Did you take them up again with Daniel Craig? I hope.
Oh, Daniel Craig was terrific. Yeah. It really started up my enthusiasm, absolutely. And that's just my opinion, but I think that, it was just so much out of space was Moonraker, and it was great. And the early ones, I was only a young boy, and I thought, this is fantastic. So that's just my take on the whole thing. What do you think, Mr. Bond expert?
I think I kind of agree with you. I think the strange thing is that I think Pierce Brosnan is a natural James Bond and made perfect sense as a Bond. His casting made perfect sense, and I think he is good. But I think he has the lowest ratio of good movies to bad. I think he made five, and I think only one of them, GoldenEye, is tremendous, and the other four are mediocre to poor. So he actually had the worst run, I would say, and therefore, I suppose, agree with you.
Mm.
Yeah, I reckon that was the Disneyland of James Bond, and it started getting serious again with Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
He was top-notch.
Pierce Brosnan famously was in the one with the invisible car, and that's a scar on anyone's CV. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was a jump the shark moment, you know. That's when Barbara and Michael had to sit down and recalibrate. And that's when they got rid of him. That's when they fired him and brought on Daniel Craig and got rid of invisible cars and stuff and took it back to basics again.
Yes.
And he had some beautiful women in Daniel Craig's episodes and some really... upward moments and some sad moments, like when that the whole city was collapsing, and was it was flooding. I can't remember the
was
movie.
That Mexico?
Oh, you mean at the end of Casino Royale in Venice?
Oh, was it Venice?
Yeah.
When the one that he loves, drowns.
Yeah, she was such a beautiful woman, and that brought a tear to me. Oh, I thought this is a terrific. Actor.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Scott. Thanks for your call.
If I might just pick up on something there.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the ones that I think are the best are the ones where Bond actually falls in love. The ones that actually do have romance in them. Mm. There's only about three or four of the 24 where he's allowed to go beyond sexual encounters into actually feeling something.
Mm.
And, of course, in one of them, on Her Majesty's Secret Service, he actually gets married. And those ones have, I don't know, they just have a little something extra, you know, because he's allowed to go there, I suppose.
I do like the romance ones too. I hope there's a bit more of that in the new one. Let's go to Shirley in Adelaide. Good evening, Shirley. How are you?
Oh, well, thank you.
Good.
Well, all I wanted to say was that I feel that Sean Connery is the real James Bond. None of the others come up to him.
What do you love about Sean Connery?
Well, he just looks like James Bond would look. I don't know what else. But,
do you have a favourite Sean Connery Bond film?
Well, no, my memory's not going back that well now. No, I can't think of a favourite one. I liked them all. But once it got to, what's his name? The one that's now so popular.
Daniel Craig.
I just don't want to be bothered watching that.
Hmm. Interesting.
So there you go.
Well, CJ, a lot of people consider Sean Connery their favourite Bond, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got the fact that he was the first one, and obviously he's in some real, real classics such as, well, Goldfinger and From Russia with Love. And there's no denying that Sean Connery was an unbelievably charismatic movie star who really filled out those films. Absolutely.
Yes, well, he was. And he just looked like James Bond ought to look.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Now, perhaps not so much in Diamonds Are Forever. Diamonds Are Forever is the one where he quit. And so George Lazenby did On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And even though that film is so good, for whatever reason, it didn't do that well at the box office. And so they got scared and they offered Sean Connery $1 million, which was the first time any movie actor, well, any actor, has been offered $1 million for a movie role to come back. And so he came back to do Diamonds Are Forever for $1 million.
Wow.
And he'd aged, and by aged, what I really mean is he'd gotten overweight.
Yeah.
And he does not look like he looked in the previous ones.
Well, Shirley, thanks for your call.
Yes, okay. Well, I'm interested in that, but I can't go on very much further because we moved away from Adelaide, from Australia overseas, and they weren't showing them.
They weren't. All right, well, I'm sure you can catch them on Netflix or DVD. Thanks for your call, Shirley.
Thank you, Shirley.
Okay, shall we go to George? And George, your favourite James Bond.
G'day, guys. Firstly, at the risk of correcting Chris, the film genius
Please.
Who I know he is, Elizabeth Taylor actually got the first actor to get offered $1 million for the role in Cleopatra back in 1963, I think.
Fair enough. Thank you.
What for the females?
Okay.
I'm a Sean Connery fan because I think he was the one, and I'm a Daniel Craig fan as well, but I think Sean Connery, you really believe he could kill people without thinking twice. Like, I think it's in Dr. No, the first one. I think he kills a woman in the bathtub, shoots her, without, you can see, without barely a flinch on his face. And this guy was a 007. He was licensed to kill, and he could do it without, as I say, thinking twice. So I always felt that, whereas with Roger Moore, he was just too nice and arch with his eyebrows, and you know, you always wondered whether he really could kill people. Timothy Dalton, I didn't mind him so much. Pierce Brosnan, he was okay, as you say, but Daniel Craig's really brought it back. But the one I wanted to mention that nobody ever mentions is the Woody Allen James Bond, which is the Casino Royale that he did in the mid-60s that Woody Allen actually wrote and starred in. And as a bit of trivia for you, Chris, George Lazenby wasn't the first Australian actor to play James Bond. It was a guy called Terence Cooper who played one of the James Bonds, because there are quite a few in that Casino Royale, which is a total parody send-up of James Bond, which was, it must have been about two or three James Bonds in from the Sean Connery one. Somebody decided to do a parody, and it's probably worth checking out. I'm not sure if it's on YouTube, but if you want something totally different from the James Bond universe, that's it.
Okay. Thank you, George. Thanks for your call. Speaking of killers, because obviously George loves a killer James Bond.
Yeah.
Now, is this a correct fact that Pierce Brosnan was the deadliest Bond? In GoldenEye alone, he ended 47 lives.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you heard that fact?
I haven't. And I haven't rewatched GoldenEye for quite a while. I mean, that sounds to me like he must, I don't know, shoot a plane load of henchmen or something.
Yeah, that's a big body count, isn't it?
Because to watch him kill 47 people individually, that would just be really, really grim. I remember there's a Roger Moore, A View to a Kill, his final film, where Christopher Walken plays the bad guy and Grace Jones plays the hench person.
Oh, yes.
You know, so Grace Jones is Christopher Walken's hench person. And Christopher Walken's character in that is, well, for a start, he's a Nazi experiment grown up, which is just great for Christopher Walken, because Christopher Walken is just so Aryan, you know, he's so blue-eyed and blonde and all of that, so sort of Norwegian looking. And he's obviously a sociopath, and in the end of that film, as things are all blowing up and blah, 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 and we're moving towards our climax, Christopher Walken takes a machine gun and starts mowing down his own men. He's got all these men in sort of orange jumpsuits working for him, building this whole thing that's going to flood Silicon Valley. And because it's done, because he's unleashed his plan, rather than pay these guys out, he just starts killing them in cold blood. And I remember my jaw dropping, thinking like, whoa, this whole thing just took a turn. This is Roger Moore land, but this guy's killing his own people in cold blood. And it's really, really brutal. And James Bond at various times has been brutal. And there are moments, I don't remember him ever shooting a woman like that. Maybe he does in Dr. No, I don't remember that. But he certainly shoots men in cold blood when they are unarmed with his license to kill. And indeed, it's in Dr. No, I think, when he's facing off with someone and the guy doesn't know whether to reach for his gun. And then he does reach for his gun and he points it at Bond, and Bond goes, "That's a Smith & Wesson. You've had your six." And the guy pulls the trigger, and sure enough, it clicks, and Bond just says, boom, and shoots him, you know? Yeah. And he does that a few times throughout
James
the series.
James Bond isn't always ethical, is he? That's one thing. Yeah. Now, we've got Eddie in Grantchester in Queensland on the line. Hello, Eddie.
Hello.
How are you going?
Oh, not too bad.
Good. What's your take on James Bond?
Well, first off, it's George Lazenby, not Lazenby.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
And he was the only bloke that fitted to James Bond. Now, James Bond was based on a Queenslander by the name of Sidney Cotton. And he is the actual James Bond that Ian Fleming wrote about.
Oh, right. Because I'd heard the story, it was a bird-watching book that he'd got the James Bond character from.
No bloody beer, and I've got the book in front of me.
Right.
Now, the book, the movie and that, and the book that was written, The Last Plane Out of Berlin, was the start of Sidney Cotton. Now, Sidney Cotton flew with Ian Fleming. Ian Fleming only made two movies, And one was the first James Bond, right? And he was a womanizer. He was the spy.
This cotton guy.
And George Lazenby, not Lazenby, gotcha. Lazenby fitted to the bill.
Okay, Eddie, thanks so much for adding to our conversation about James Bond. CJ, when it comes to how you rated these movies that you put in order in those 20 categories, tell us about some of those other categories that because I think we only got down a couple of categories there.
Oh, okay. Well, I think some of the ones, you know, I rate them on integrity, which is how well I think they fit in the universe that Ian Fleming actually created, because, you know, only a few of them are direct from the books. Casino Royale with Daniel Craig is pretty much direct from the book, and From Russia with Love is pretty much direct from the book, and Dr. No is relatively, and On Her Majesty's Secret Service is practically, you know, page for page, script for page of the novel from the book. But the rest of them are all kind of hodgepodges. Some of them are drawn from short stories. Some of them take bits from here, bits from here, bits from here, bits from here. So you've kind of got to feel the essence of Fleming and work out what I call the integrity. Another fun one is Bond's Man in Country. You'll often find that when Bond goes to another country, he'll meet up with someone, he'll liaise with someone. Now, more often than not, it's Felix Leiter, who works for the CIA, who's been played by something like 17 different actors the course of the thing. Jack Lord played him for the first time and then went off to do Hawaii 5-0. He's been played by all sorts of people. At one point, one person played Leiter and then disappeared for a whole bunch of films where other people played Felix Leiter and then came back as Felix Leiter. And currently, of course, Felix Leiter is played by Jeffrey Wright, which is terrific. He's a fantastic actor. So Bond's Man in Country is always interesting. My favourite Bond's Man in Country was played by Topol in From Your Eyes Only. If you remember, he played a very, very interesting sort of Greek correspondent of James Bond. I also got to give, you know, points for set design. To me, one of the great things, besides the locations of Bond, was the set design and the early Bonds especially, which were designed by a guy named Ken Adam. If you think about films like You Only Live Twice, which takes place inside a volcano, you know, these incredible sets.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
Yeah, that they built. So he would have like £1 million budget to build that volcano set, and they built it, and they had to build the whole hole in the thing, and they flew a helicopter in through that hole. All that stuff was what they refer to in the business as practical, you know. They weren't visual effects. These were all practicals and practical stunts. So set design was always a good one. I always give a little performance for Bond's actual performance. And, of course, the songs. You know, you got to rate the songs.
Oh, yes.
Ever since From Russia With Love, Dr. No didn't have a theme song. It just had the music, the score. But from Russia With Love on, there's always been a song. Yeah. And so you got to rate the songs.
And some of the best performers in the world vie to get a chance to do that.
Yeah. You know who's doing the new one?
Billie Eilish.
Yeah, which I'm very, very excited about.
Yeah, we'll be playing that a bit later in our quiz. I actually loved Garbage's. I just got the real mean, nasty, dirtiness about it all. And the sadness, because essentially for me, James Bond is a bit of a sad character.
Totally. And I think that's something that Daniel Craig really picks up on.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously in Casino Royale, spoiler alert, he falls in love with Vesper Lynd and then she dies, which is sort of echoing back to On Her Majesty's Secret Service when he gets married and then his wife gets assassinated in the final moments of the film. So he's loved and lost a couple of times throughout the series. And Daniel Craig really, once he loses Vesper Lynd at the end of Casino Royale, he's pretty broken. And he spends Quantum of Solace, the next film, broken and drinking too much and just pouting and being sad and angry and all of this and can't trust anyone. And that's one of his sort of fundamental features, is his lack of trust. And that's part of the reason he's so distant from women in general. And then very often when he does allow himself to fall in love with them, they die and blah, blah, blah. And so I think Daniel Craig really does tap into that sadness and
that tragedy of the character.
He's quite melancholy.
We've got Dave now on the line from Canberra. Hello, Dave.
G'day, how are you going?
Very well, very well. So you are talking about who the next Bond may be.
Yes, I certainly am. And I have to say, you know, I might have a little bit of personal preference in this because he is my favourite actor of all time, and he's an actor who has managed to not get typecast. Mr. Harrison Ford.
As James Bond?
Harrison Ford? You don't think he's a bit too old now?
They're not going to cast an 80-year-old as James Bond.
Oh, we can do an older James Bond.
Have you gone to see Call of the Wild yet?
No, I haven't.
It's out in cinemas right now. Harrison Ford and a CGI dog.
Maybe Harrison Ford in a retirement village as James Bond. Maybe he'd get that role.
See, they won't be making, because they won't make the next one for about 4 years from this one. I don't think Harrison can do it.
But thanks, Dave. You can hope. Thanks, I think David. You can hope. And
there
we've
is
only got
always
a,
hope.
Yeah, there is. Thanks a lot for your call. Now, we've only got a couple of minutes, CJ, but I just want to ask you, so what are your top six films in order, going from your six to your number one?
Okay, well, my number six is Skyfall.
Ooh.
Skyfall is really good. It is beautifully shot. That's part of what they aspired to in that one, was to really have a great sort of cinematographic look. Goldfinger is excellent because it's kind of got it all. The Spy Who Loved Me is Roger Moore's best one. It's good fun, great locations, lots of snow, blah, 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 blah. From Russia with Love, superb, ultimate
espionage.
Yes,
it would have to be in your top six, wouldn't it?
Yep. On Her Majesty's Secret Service is my second favorite. I just think it's got it all. George Lazenby is very, very, very good. He falls in love, et cetera, et cetera. She dies. And then Casino Royale with Daniel Craig, his entrance to the series. I just think it's perfect.
It is, isn't it?
It's so good. It's got romance. It's got and it adheres to the Ian Fleming novel. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, I agree with you. Casino Royale is my favourite as well. Mm. CJ, thanks so much for joining us and taking us through all those wonderful eras of James Bond. It's actually whetted my appetite for the next James Bond. When are you going to see it?
Well, as a critic, hopefully about 1 week before it gets released. And if I was just a man on the street, on opening day, of course.
Fabulous.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.